Video games today look a lot different than they did 40 years ago. What started as Pac-Man and Tetris are now games with beautiful soundtracks and realistic graphics. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking about video game creation and hear about how students at the University of Wisconsin-Stout are building their own from scratch. And Carl Cayley is with us. He's an assistant professor of game design at UW-Stout. He teaches design courses for 2D game art, 3D modeling, and exploratory games. And I'm telling you, the students are producing some great designs and great games. And as we talk with Carl, I want to hear from you. Let us know about your favorite video game, or maybe you're designing a video game of your own. How's it going? What questions do you have? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Carl Cayley, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for the great introduction. It's a pleasure to be here today, Larry.
You guys are doing some really cool things at UW-Stout. Maybe just to begin, walk us through everything it takes to design a game.
Well, you know, we got to start at the very beginning and ask ourselves, what is the game? What's the experience? And I might even ask you and your listeners, like, what do they first think of when they think of a game? Going back to your childhood, you might have played very simple games like, you know, tag or dodgeball. And when designing these games, we have to start at the basics of what is the simple mechanic or the turn or how do you win the game? Are there any things that you think of going back to, playing games as a child?
As a younger guy, I got involved with Berserk, and I got to be really good at Berserk. And I can remember being up north on a fishing trip, and Berserk game was just put in, and there were three teenage boys that were just following, and they couldn't wait to get started on it. And they were playing it for a minute or two, and I walked over and I put my whatever quarters or whatever it was, and I said, "Oh, what's this game about?" And they said, "Well, you got to do this, you got to do that." And I said, "Oh, it doesn't sound too hard." So When I did it, I ran I don't know how many boards, and I said, "Oh, wasn't too hard at all," and walked away. So that was the highlight of my whole career of playing a video game was that. And they looked at me with their mouths open because they weren't doing so well just to begin. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, Berserk. Now, that was the game where you moved a little paddle back and forth, kind of like Pong was on the sides, but it had the bottom, right?
Yeah.
And you would hit the ball. So that was definitely a eye-hand coordination, skills-based game. And
I got really good at it.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Well,
yeah.
So, you know, you got to have rules. There's got to be, you know, there's a lot involved. The art is involved, mm-hmm. certainly. I mean, what else, you know, what do your students learn?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we have, we've got a nationally ranked video game design and development program, typically in the top 20 ranked nationally, and one of the largest schools of art and design in the Midwest. And so the students who are in the game design program are typically in one of two different program tracks. The program that I teach in is the art side. And so we teach students how to make graphics, how to draw in the computer, how to make 3D models, and then how to make them move and animate. There's another program at Stout, it's computer science, that emphasizes game design. And those students are learning to program, to create algorithms and systems, and they work together. A big part of making these games, that collaboration is key. And at Stout, we are a polytechnic university where we really emphasize engaging and hands-on activities and applying this learning. And so it's possible to do a game by yourself, but oftentimes it requires a lot of different disciplines, a lot of different collaborations to make it come together.
Describe the range and quality of today's games. I mean, it's so different from when I was playing them a lot.
Well, you know, video games in the industry is huge. It's bigger than the film industry. And the businesses can range from a few people to thousands who are located across the world. And the range of styles can also vary. What I like to see is that there's some big companies that are pursuing this hyper-realistic games. And there's some other independent games who might not have the chances to put in all the extra features and splashing water and whatnot, but are able to embrace the style and really give a good emotional experience to a game without having that high fidelity.
I'm thinking, what kind of computer equipment do you need for the? I mean, if you're going to do something, you know, pretty fancy, you probably need some fancy equipment.
You can do an awful lot with just a simple computer. If you're doing high-end 3D graphics, then yeah, you might need to upgrade into, you know, video cards and processors to do that. But games can be still pretty simple. You can make card games and board games. And in fact, our students do that. When they go through the program, they start out their first year doing some introduction to art. They start to do the board game design and look at the rules. And then later they start to learn to do 2D graphics, then 3D games. And all that ends up culminating into a senior game, which is a full academic year, teams of 10, 12 students, both on the art side and on the computer science side, making a 3D game.
How many kids are in the program? Or students, I should say.
Well, the two programs, there's about 200 in the art and about 200 in the computer science side that's focused on games.
Wow, that's a lot of people involved. That's compared to other programs, I imagine that's a pretty popular program.
It is really popular. It's also really challenging because there's a lot that goes into making a game, to learn how to make 2D graphics and 3D graphics. And one of the fun things about it is it's not a linear process like film and movies are, you know, time-based. But to program and to anticipate what the player might do takes a lot of extra effort.
I would think so. And there's different kinds of games. I mean, there's, and maybe you can talk about it, there's sort of what they call, is it arcade games, and there's action. What other ones are involved?
Oh, there's so many different styles. There is the arcade games where you played with Berserk, which fundamentally was trying to get you to put more quarters in the machine, right?
Yeah. I got so good that I didn't have to put so many quarters in after a while.
Right. And some people like the narrative games that tells an interactive story where you have choices between which direction to take, which is kind of like the analog version of a choose your own adventure book. There's, you know, horror games, and there's games that focus on skills and time-based games, platformer games, which you've probably heard or played Mario.
Yeah,
Nintendo games.
Of course.
there's a whole bunch of games related to those. And there's also experimental games or serious games. Serious games would include things like training, simulations, which are kind of sometimes not considered in that game umbrella for entertainment, but are a really important part of the game design processes, simulating or job training.
Yeah, I was thinking about, I forget where I was when I... There was a game essentially to show you how difficult it is, I think, to be a helicopter pilot. So I crashed many times trying to deal with it. I suppose that's in a way. I mean, it was for training purposes that people used the game before they got in a helicopter, for sure.
Right. I'd want to play that game. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and I realized that I guess I'm not sure I had the coordination for it. Of course, I was only at it for a few minutes, but it was being – so that's a game that was actually being used to, you know, give people the skills, the basic skills, before they actually got in with an instructor in a helicopter.
Right, right.
Sports games, too. Those are other games that – the video games. I played baseball and bowling and basketball and golf. I've done some golf games that I'm actually pretty well in those. But those are kind of fun games. Do the kids at Stout, the students at Stout, do they use those kinds of games or try to create them?
You know, sometimes they're trying to go beyond the simple sports games and maybe mash them up in new, unique ways. And so it might be a kart racing game, but you're in a different location. It might be that you are trying to solve different scenarios or puzzles in new and unique ways. That's one of the challenges we have in our exploratory games class, is to try to think of new controllers, perhaps, instead of just a standard joystick, but thinking of maybe a rhythm-based game or other ways to give a chance to explore new input devices or experiences.
Carl Cayley is our guest today. He's an assistant professor of game design at the UW Stout, talking with him about games. I hope you join in with your own question or comment, or maybe your own experience with a video game. Love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about video game design with our guest Carl Cayley, assistant professor of game design at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. Great to have him with us. And again, join in with your own questions or comments, or maybe your own experiences with a video game. Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Carl, what do you love about helping students create these games?
Oh, my gosh. I love being able to watch their growth when students get it, that eureka moment when they're able to say, oh, I've played a game in the past, and now I understand how it works. Now I can get excited about making my own experience. There's an awful lot that we go through in the School of Art and Design for teaching game art for, you know, students who are interested in doing a little programming. They fill their minds up in the 4 years that they have in the bachelor's program. And I really enjoy seeing when they have that final showcase at the end of the semester to showcase all their work.
Yeah, that's the cool part about being a teacher, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You start with, in the courses I've taught, you know, you start at a very basic level, and then at the end, if students think back to where they were when they started the semester, I taught a broadcast course a long time, and I'd always record their first assignment, and then I would, their last assignment was to produce, you know, like a half-hour radio show. And I would, the last day of class, I'd mix together a little bit of each student from their first assignment that they read in front of the class to their last assignment. And they all are a little embarrassed, it feels like, when they turn red a little bit, when they hear their own voice from the first assignment, and then they listen to how they sound at the end. And it's always brings a bit of joy.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's kind of like journaling or reflecting back on a diary, right? And helping them to see that process shows them the growth. I love that. That's a great idea.
What's the, I know, and you may have mentioned this, but I know that teaching interest of yours is exploratory games. Mm-hmm. What is that all about? Talk a bit more about that.
I would imagine that many of the listeners have experience with arcade games or console games like a Nintendo or a Xbox or PlayStation. And there's so many other games that will, for example, talk through an emotional experience or really focus in on a specific key or feature. When we take students to different local conferences, there's one in Madison called the MDEV conference coming up in November. They get a chance to show off their games. They get to meet people in industry. And then we also take groups out to the Game Developers Conference, which is an international conference in San Francisco. And there's a whole group of alternate controller games. And some of those are very unique. In fact, you can probably only see them or play them in that one location where it's maybe you interact with an umbrella to bounce the asteroids away from stars in space, or maybe you are on a teeter-totter rocking a ship or trying to be a monster veterinarian with a giant, you know, Muppet type or puppet type character. Those are the type of things that I think are really fun. When students are in industry, there's deadlines and budgets and things, but when you're able to apply these in the classroom, they can take some serious chances to explore and discover and innovate new things.
Colleen emailed us and wants you to talk about assistive devices so everybody could be involved in video games.
I know there's some existing assistive devices available. Microsoft has one, I believe, that is a device that has different pads and switches on it. And that allows players to interact with the devices in different ways. Some games, if they're really thinking about accessibility, they will put in different settings to allow you to map keys to different buttons or different controls. And so they're in many big games, they put in devices to even maybe change the coloring for individuals with color blindness.
So there are things available out there. The university hosts the Stout Game Expo. Tell us about that event.
Right. It is the culmination of the semester's work by our students. It's open to the public at the end of the semester. And during their first year, students do board games. The second year, they'll do like video, 2D video games. Exploratory games in their third year, and that final year has their senior capstone. And there can be, you know, many different booths set up, and students get to showcase their games. And it's different each time. Sometimes you might have a VR game. One time we had a physical game where people were playing in a space. And so that is in the Memorial Student Center, and they fill the whole place up with their tables and computers. And
what would be an example of a physical game? I mean, you know, I can remember and have done this with my daughter. There's the screen that we're dancing in the living room. Is that what you're talking about? And you try to keep up or follow the steps of the design person on the screen.
Certainly. It could be a rhythm-based game where they're, you know, tapping different inputs. One year, the students made a physical game where they were hopping between different tiles. And there was turns they would take to, you know, you get two tiles for this turn, or you get to have, I think there might even have been a ball involved as well. So those, you know, reinventions of simple schoolyard games are sometimes really interesting.
What can you tell us about this year's standouts, let's say, or some standouts from the past few years?
Oh my gosh, this last end of the year, our expo at the Stout Game Expo, there were five senior games, and many of them involved networking. So it was multiplayer games. And so they had to take that extra step to allow the computers to talk with each other across a network. One of them involved the inputs were on mobile phones, so you could play right from your phone. Other ones, you'd have to communicate through voice channels and whatnot. Every year gets bigger and better.
I should say it does. And I went to the website, and I was blown away by the games. And some of them you could download yourself if you wanted to play them. And I didn't check. I didn't download any to check. Is there a cost associated with that?
No, all those games I sent to you were free. They're available online on itch.io is the website that hosts them. But yeah, the students are learning these, you know, tools and steps to make the game. And every single game, we go through the process of thinking up a concept. We have to then consider the user who's going to be playing this and make simple prototypes. And then after many, many iterations, that simple, you know, box or ball turns into a character, and we do test it to make sure that it's meeting the needs of the original concept and the experience that we're designing for.
Michael emailed us, are there games that emphasize cooperation instead of competition?
Good question.
And we've been wondering if they're popular or are they in existence?
There are. Those games are often called asymmetric games, or I should say the one that I've helped students make before was an asymmetric cooperative game. And that game had one player as a human character, and another player was this giant bird. And the bird had to then swoop down, pick up the character, and then fly them across these other floating islands. And so I think, you know, cooperation is something that is sometimes challenging if you have players like an adult and a child who are very different in their skill levels. To try to work together to reach the same goal.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that idea a lot. What I'm wondering, where are game design students finding jobs after they graduate? You get a lot of people coming out for it, and where do they go to work?
Right. Well, we typically think of big game industries on the coasts, New York or California, but we do have a thriving game design community in Madison. And so some students find internships in local areas or find maybe a remote internship online. Students can also shift into other areas like architectural visualization. Sometimes they'll go to graphic design or training simulations. It can really vary depending on who's hiring and who has the interest in using the skills that our students are developing to apply to their engineering and design fields.
I know in Madison, they've had some real successes and probably made quite a bit of money on this. But I'm wondering about how much would a person make in this kind of business?
Oh, that really varies from what market you're in and I don't know that I would be able to give a big range on that, because from artists versus programmers versus network, they range greatly between the different salary ranges.
Yeah, depending on where you are. Well, if somebody out there is interested in designing their own video game, let's say, but they don't have a lot of experience, where do they start? Or where should they start?
Well, let me tell you about how I got into this. I had gone to school for 3D animation and film production, but it wasn't until I went to a local meetup that was a game jam. And this event was hosted by a local development group. And you would meet people. You would talk about skills and interests. And you would have then the weekend. It had 48 hours to make a game. And it's been so enjoyable that I've done 8 of these so far. And they're not big games. They're all free to play online. But that is something that I really enjoy, is to be able to take a big idea and put it into a small time frame and just say, try it. It might fail, but it might be awesome. And so if anybody's looking to do that, just start small and pick away at it. You can find a lot of things on YouTube and go for it.
And UW Stout's website, you just go to the website and check in video games and search, and that's going to pop up. Is that your work? Absolutely.
That's a bunch of our students' work. Yep.
Carl, a pleasure. Carl Cayley, Assistant Professor of Game Design at UW Stout. Go online, take a look at their games. They got some fantastic games, and they certainly amaze me. And they amaze Clara Neipert, our producer. Joel Patnod's our other producer. Our technical director today, Lee Rayburns. Jeff Robbins also does it. And our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller.